Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Issues in 30 days. Issue 26. Are we even asking the right questions about guns? You know, we scheduled this segment for today back in August, but it happens to arrive in a week when a Nassau County cop who helped guard the candidates at their Long Island debate, 29-year-old Officer Arthur Lopez, was shot and killed with an illegal handgun. A New York City cop was shot yesterday, too. We just heard about both of those stories on the news. Neither candidate has wanted to talk about the issue on the campaign trail. It finally came up in that town hall debate raised by Nina Gonzalez of Nassau County.
President Obama, during the Democratic National Convention in 2008, you stated you wanted to keep AK-47s out of the hands of criminals. What has your administration done or plan to do to limit the availability of assault weapons?
So let's re-listen to Romney's and Obama's answers through a different lens today and talk about Mayor Bloomberg's inserting himself here with Adam Winkler, constitutional law professor at UCLA and author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America, published last year. Adam, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And before we revisit their answers in the debate, let's do some context, because this usually comes up as a debate about a federal assault weapons ban, as the question was asked there. And you've written that that emphasis misses the point of the problem we really need to address. Why do you think so?
Well, President Obama said it himself in the debate. He said that there's an awful lot of violence going on in places like Chicago, and they're not using AK-47s. They're using cheap handguns. And I think that's right. We focus on these mass killings and someone like the Aurora shooter who brings an assault rifle, but those are really a very small part of the gun deaths in America. There's about 30,000 gun deaths in America every year. Only a tiny fraction of those are the result of mass shootings. The real problems are suicide, which is about 55% of all gun deaths, and gang-related violence, which occupies about two-thirds of the remainder of gun violence.
And we have an interactive map on our 30-issue site. And listeners, this is really eye-opening, so you'll want to, many of you will want to see this at wnyc.org/issues, that allows you to click on a state where guns were recovered and see which states those guns mostly came from. So if you click on New York, you'll see that guns recovered here did not come from here very much. They came mostly from south of here along the East Coast, from Pennsylvania, and from all the states along the coast, from Virginia south to Florida. Adam Winkler, would that be news to you?
Well, no. One of the real problems we have with gun control in America is that we have very few federal laws and we have a lot of state laws. We've basically taken the approach that states should be the ones to regulate guns. But the problem is that the guns easily are transported over state lines. And so gun laws in New York are rendered much less effective because people can go buy guns in states where it's very easy to do so and import those guns into New York. It's illegal, but it's very easy to do.
And again, listeners, if you want to use that interactive map, you can go to wnyc.org/issues and see the latest thing that our fabulous data news team here at WNYC has put together. And that includes at least four swing states, Adam, providing us most of our weapons. And the stats show that most independent voters do not favor more gun controls. So is that the presidential politics of this in a nutshell?
Well, there's no doubt that the presidential politics of this in a nutshell are avoid gun control at all costs. You know, the Democratic Party has basically made it an informal plank in the platform to avoid talking about gun control because they're afraid of alienating those swing state voters and rural Americans. I don't think the Democratic Party has much hope of winning the traditional red states in the South, but nonetheless, there's so many voters who think that gun control is a losing issue. I think that the Democratic Party, as a result, avoids it, and the Republican Party takes for granted the support that they're going to get from the NRA.
People are already calling in on this. If you want to weigh in from any perspective, our lines are open, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9696. 9-2, especially to gun rights callers. Is there nothing, in your opinion, that the government can do to control the flow of weapons into the hands of criminals in terms of government regulation that wouldn't restrict your rights as a law-abiding citizen to own a gun? What do you think? Can we not walk that line in some way? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Adam Winkler, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. The debate questioner, Nina Gonzalez, whose clip we played, came on our show the day after the debate. And I asked her why, of all things under the sun, she raised guns as her issue. And her response was very revealing.
I'm a mental health provider, and I just feel that, you know, gun control is a real problem, that, you know, we need to limit that, the availability of weapons. Mm-hmm. And there's just too many tragedies that have occurred, and we have to figure out a solution to that problem.
Nina Gonzalez on this program the day after the debate. And Adam, I thought that was a very interesting answer, and I guess she sees the mix of guns and mentally ill people causing too many tragedies. And I don't know about people she has treated, but we all think of the Gabby Giffords and Batman movie shooters, and they didn't necessarily use the kinds of guns that you think most need to be controlled. So what kinds of policies do you think might prevent those kinds of tragedies?
Well, I think we should be realistic about any reform in this area. Because we have 280 million guns in circulation in America, any law we pass will only affect the margins. It's not going to no law we can pass is going to eliminate mass shootings, for instance, or stop people from committing suicide. Nevertheless, there are things we can do to make it more difficult for the wrong people to get their hands on guns. We could improve, for instance, the federal background check system. Currently, the federal law only requires background checks on approximately 60% of lawful gun purchases. We should have every gun purchase go through a background check, and we should improve the background check system so that we have better reporting of mental health data, so that those who are mentally ill and can't be trusted with guns don't have easy access to them.
Let's take a call. Antonia in Emerson, I think a gun rights caller. You're on WNYC. Hi, Antonia.
Thank you, Brian. It's wonderful to talk to you on this topic without so much fire and light. I agree that guns need to be controlled, particularly the smaller, as you would say, the smaller Saturday night specials, the ones that end up being used for the $10,000 stick-up at the local bank. I do also point out that it's not just guns availability, but the culture of guns that speaks volumes to how they're used. I really don't worry about the 15,000 using them for suicide. That's a mental health thing, and it has to be corrected. But the thing that drives people into depression is not the firearm. That's the end result. Also, I have a question for all of those people who are thinking that safety and gun control is going to be delivered by the government. Why is it that Vermont, which has almost no gun control, is much safer than New York? And why is Switzerland, where almost every male is taught through military training, has military equipment at home, and yet they're safer than Great Britain?
How would you answer your own question?
I would say that ultimately gun crime is a multifactorial occurrence. You basically have to have someone who's physically capable, has some basic knowledge of it, maybe an insufficient knowledge of how to use it. That's the person who has the accidental discharge killing the three-year-old baby. Basically, in Switzerland, one of the big family things is shooting matches. Everyone goes to the shooting match. And it's basically part of their, just like we throw horseshoes, they have shooting matches. In Vermont, most of the people have a long history of rural work. And farms, the 22 caliber rifle behind the door is almost standard equipment to keep the vermin down. So these are people who have basically either been trained to use firearms, B, have been used to them for their lifetime, and C, do not see them directly associated with a means of getting wealth through stealing things or crime.
I don't think we throw many horseshoes anymore. I think watch football. But go ahead.
Let me ask you one final question, and I'm going to dare you to do this.
Go ahead.
And please, what happened to Gabrielle Giffords was a true tragedy, and what the people who were killed with her were also a true tragedy. The interesting thing is there's never a report on the public media of a congressman's family whose home was invaded. They repelled the son of the congressman, repelled it with a 12-gauge shotgun.
That story
actually right. never got it. It was carried by the AP. If you want, I can actually send you the link.
I'll believe you if you say it. And so let me throw all of those as a group to our guest, Adam Winkler. We hear these arguments frequently. Some of the places that have the least gun control also have the least crime. And what about the argument that, at least in some cases, more guns equals less crime because people can defend themselves or deter criminals by knowing that they're out there?
Well, I think there is no doubt that guns are used every day for self-defense. All the studies show that. There's great debates over how often, but even the low estimates are that approximately 100,000 times a year people use guns in self-defense. So they are valid instruments of self-defense. Nonetheless, I think that comparing places like Vermont and New York City can be somewhat of a distraction because the problems are so different. Vermont has no major cities, has very little crime. We have in New York City and where I live in Los Angeles, we have significant gangs that are involved in drug dealing, and that's where we see so much of the gun violence coming from. I do agree that familiarity with guns would help reduce accidents and accidental shootings, although, again, that's kind of like the mass shootings. They are things that are high profile that get a lot of attention, but probably aren't the real heart of the gun problem.
And I want to play now clips from the president's answer and Governor Romney's answer in that debate. And I was struck in their answers that while Obama did support bringing back a federal assault weapons ban and Romney opposed it, so they were different on that score, they both went to somewhat similar places with respect to behavioral issues. Here is about a minute of each.
And so what I'm trying to do is to get a broader conversation about how do we reduce the violence generally. Part of it is seeing if we can get an assault weapons ban reintroduced, but part of it is also looking at other sources of the violence. Because, frankly, in my hometown of Chicago, there's an awful lot of violence, and they're not using AK-47s, they're using cheap handguns. And so what can we do to intervene to make sure that young people have opportunity, that our schools are working, that if there's violence on the streets, that working with faith groups and law enforcement, we can catch it before it gets out of control. And so what I want is a comprehensive strategy.
President Obama and Mitt Romney.
He mentioned good schools. I totally agree. We were able to drive our schools to be number one in the nation in my state. And I believe if we do a better job in education, we'll give people the hope and opportunity they deserve and perhaps less violence from that. But let me mention another thing, and that is parents. We need moms and dads helping raise kids. Wherever possible, the benefit of having two parents in the home, and that's not always possible. A lot of great single moms, single dads. But gosh, to tell our kids that before they have babies, they ought to think about getting married to someone, that's a great idea. Because if there's a two-parent family, the prospect of living in poverty goes down dramatically.
So, Adam Winkler, I mean, Romney has gotten a lot of derision for bringing marriage and two-parent homes into it. And I believe Loeffner, who shot Gabby Giffords, and Holmes, who shot up the movie theater, came from two-parent homes. So that's important to mention. But by your standard, those kinds of shootings are not the big national problem we need to address. So before we completely dismiss Romney's answer as irrelevant pandering to the marriage lobby, Obama also went to poverty and child development issues, you notice. So don't we want to look at gun laws and those things?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, if we want to look at what the source is of America's gun problem, it's probably the American culture, lack of opportunity, the fact that in America's urban environment, gangs are a viable alternative for a young person coming up who sees that the success in his neighborhood being the success of drug dealers. So we do need to do more. Of course, those are very, very difficult things to do. It's very difficult to completely change the education system. I think there are things things that we can do with regards to regulating guns in the short term that could have an impact, such as improving the federal background check system. But if we want to think long term, there's no doubt that getting to the heart of the gun problem is going to be getting to the heart of poverty and lack of opportunity in America.
Let's listen to some more callers. Our lines are jammed with people wanting to talk about this. Stephanie in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hello, Stephanie.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I'm presently a professor, but I worked in the public school system in New York years ago. And I had a student with a 9mm gun. I had to quickly get him out the room. He was back in the room showing off his gun and how much money he made. He was a drug dealer. So I really, really support having some kind of federal gun control. Parents can't always control their students' their activities because some of them are selling drugs to help pay the mortgage or get some extra money for food. This is a definite problem in the city or in the low-income schools. So there really needs to be some kind of federal gun control. Forget NRA. This is the real world. Young people have guns, a lot of them. It's unfortunate.
Stephanie, thank you very much. Larry in Cold Spring, you're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hi, good morning, Brian. My take on the issue is one thing. Basically, I'm not saying that you can't go into a gun store and buy a hunting rifle or any type of rifle like that. The issue, again, as I dealt with in law enforcement for 25 years, was people going to these southern states, walking into a store and buying 3 or 4 guns at a time with no background check, no mental history check, and anything like that, with a P.O. box as a address, coming back to New York City, selling the guns for drugs or whatever to the drug dealer. So that's really the main issue that I would have, especially anybody in law enforcement, with the laws that are so easily going around them down in the southern states. It has nothing to do with the NRA. It has nothing to do with phoning and buying an assault rifle a hunting rifle if that's what you want to do. It's that you could walk in and within 5 minutes have a gun and walk out the store.
Larry, thank you very much. Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really believe the Second Amendment absolutists of NRA and people like that really maintain that position because they just don't care about the kind of urban gun violence in places like the South Bronx where I live. You know, I've never seen an NRA absolutist who had any really knowledge or concern about urban crime, urban violence, or what people in these kinds of neighborhoods have to deal with.
But I think they would say it doesn't come from lack of concern. It comes from a feeling that they may live in a gun-saturated state like Texas, but that it doesn't have the same amount of crime as there may be in the South Bronx. So the problem must be something other than the guns.
Well, and I would say to them that that's probably not the case in certain neighborhoods in Houston. I've been to Texas. Those NRA absolutists are of a certain type of people who live in certain types of areas where they are insulated from these kinds of issues of gangs and urban crime that your guest is talking about, and that makes them indifferent to it.
Thank you very much. Phil in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I have something beeping in the background. Well, I'd like to make a few quick points. And then I would like to address your what restriction. You know I'm very pro-gun. We've been talking about this together on your wonderful show for 20 years. More guns do equal less crime. There have been definitive studies that prove it. 42 states now have must-issue carry permits. So New York is out of step with the rest of the nation. Assault weapons, even when the assault weapon bill came through under Clinton, are only used in 0.5% of crime. It was a subterfuge to get more gun control.
What about the handguns?
30,000 deaths.
Phil, what about the things that our 25-year detective, who was a couple of calls ago, said, and that's reflected on this map that we put together, where most of the guns that are recovered in New York come from a number of states, mostly south of here along the East Coast? Is this not a factor at all in looking at whether handgun background checks, tighter controls on the sale of handguns or the state-to-state transfer of handguns should be a function of the federal government?
There are, Ryan, very strong controls over handguns. They are not easily obtained. Now, where there is a corrupt dealer, like some of the Bloomberg investigation showed, those people need to be closed down. I personally, and I've said this to you 20 years ago, I think that there should be a limit. You can only buy one gun at a time, mm-hmm. even if you have to walk in every day mm-hmm. or once a week or once a month. And this is where I do part with, you know, some of my pro-gun brethren. I think it's insane that somebody can walk in without proper identification, just like I think it's insane that people aren't ID'd to vote. You know, you mm-hmm. walk in, you show a P.O. box in Georgia, and you can buy 100 guns.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
So that's one thing. And, Phil, I got to go, but I appreciate your call, as always. And Adam Winkler, you heard those four calls back to back to back to back. Do you see any hope for common ground? In, you know, they were coming from some pretty different places.
Well, that's right. People do come from different places. And it's true that finding a solution to America's gun problem is very, very difficult, and there's a lot of different approaches to it. One of the things that I found, Brian, when I was going around the country talking about gunfight, I found that there was a lot of consensus among gun owners and gun control advocates that we could do things like increase background checks, that it doesn't interfere with people's ability to lawfully own guns, and that it's the kind of thing that we all agree that there are some people who shouldn't be able to get guns, so we should be doing more to make sure that they don't get guns. I agree with the caller that sometimes it does seem too easy for people to go buy multiple firearms without a background check. Usually you can't do that at a gun store, but you can go to a gun show and find someone who is not a federally licensed dealer, and they can sell you a gun without doing a background check. That's a major loophole in our gun laws that we should close up, and I think it's the kind of thing that we could get people to gather around and support. But let's face it, the elected officials are not going to do anything about this in the near or in the near term because they're fearful of the electoral consequences of doing so.
All right, real quick, do you know which one of the candidates has signed a bill to limit gun rights and which one has only signed a bill to expand gun rights?
Well, the irony here is that Mitt Romney is the candidate that signed a bill into law that was a heavy restriction on gun rights. It was an assault weapons ban in Massachusetts. And President Obama, since he's been in office, received an F rating from the Brady Center, the nation's leading gun control organization, because he signed bills that have loosened America's gun laws. But yet, you can be sure that the NRA is taking out ads today to support Mitt Romney and not Barack Obama.
Romney did one of his famous evolutions, we can call it, on that issue. The bills, if you're curious, folks, that Obama signed are to allow guns in national parks and on Amtrak trains. There is one other candidate. Oh, do you know if either candidate has taken a position on the expansion of gun rights in many states, particularly the so-called stand your ground laws that almost got the killer of Trayvon Martin off without serious scrutiny?
You know, I haven't seen anything on that. I would imagine that, if anything, that Mitt Romney has come out in support of those laws because that's the base to which he's appealing to.
And there is one other politician that we should mention in this context, New York's own Mayor Bloomberg, who just recently set up a super PAC to influence, I guess, mostly congressional elections with a pro-gun control agenda. And he's been saying things like this about the presidential candidates. This is from right after the movie theater shooting.
Soothing words are nice, but maybe it's time that the two people who want to be president of the United States stand up and tell us what they're going to do about it, because this is obviously a problem across the country.
Adam, does Mayor Bloomberg matter?
Well, I think Mayor Bloomberg has become the leader of the gun control movement in America. He is the head spokesman, the person who is really leading the charge for gun control. I think that we're not going to see politicians in Washington taking this issue up anytime soon. I think the Democrats are too fearful of the issue, and Republicans are too beholden to the gun money and the gun voters who are going to support them come Election Day. So I don't expect anyone but Mayor Bloomberg to be taking a leadership role in this issue, unfortunately.
Is it ironic that violent crime has come down in New York City to record lows while Mayor Bloomberg makes such a big issue of the availability of guns? It seems to be other kinds of measures that have really had the impact on city violence.
Well, that's right. I mean, we hear one of your callers even said it, suggested that the drastic reduction in violent crime in America over the last 20 or 30 years was tied to expansion of gun rights.
But it's not crystal clear that that's the case. The studies that some studies have shown that, but the studies have been questioned by other studies. And there's cities like New York and Los Angeles where gun control remains as restrictive as ever, and yet we've still had historic drops in violent crime.
Adam Winkler, constitutional law professor at UCLA and the author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Thank you so much for doing Issue 26 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days series with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, folks, our World Affairs Week on 30 Issues last week was produced by Paige Cowett. Culture Wars Week, now underway, is being produced by Lisa Allison. Be sure to check out our data graphic on America's gun availability. You can contrast where guns are recovered in which states versus where those guns came from in this fabulous interactive data graphic at wnyc.org/issues. We also have articles you can read if you want to go deeper into some of our topics this week, some of the best writing on the culture wars as selected by the editors of longform.org, all at wnyc.org/issues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, why a $100 million gift to Central Park raises hackles, not just hopes. Stay with us.